This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Lovely to see you all here this evening. Just before we start, I'm interested for those who've been who've been to the previous shiurim. I just want to start with any comments or questions on the previous shiurim. Anybody who's tried anything and it's worked?
Best week ever.
The best week ever, really? How did you do that?
Well, firstly, I re-downloaded the shiur that Sir Ramon was handing out, so I had revision. And then I just tried out positive thinking. I actually phoned my dad a few times in the office. I'm like, how's it going? And even if I wasn't feeling like that, just by me doing that, and it probably works.
It's not. But it's not. It's not positive thinking. And a lot of people say this is not about positive thinking. This is different. Positive thinking is a state of mind. And you're right. If you have a positive state of mind, it helps you be positive. But what we're talking about is not positive thinking. It's far, far, far beyond positive thinking. What we're talking about is the capability of removing limitation and of creating possibility. That's what we're talking about. Now, positive thinking is just, you know, being positive. That's a good, it's a good mood, a good state of being. What we've been talking about is something much, much more than that. And creating your own possibilities, and creating possibility, and creating miracle, and operating on a level of miracle. This is not just positive thinking. Is things go well? That's nice. Things go well is nice, but that's what we're talking about. We're talking about nisim. We're talking about becoming accustomed to the supernatural, making the supernatural natural, making the supernatural natural for you, because that's where you're. Where you're operating, that is so important. We're listening to a CD that Stephen Bender gave me, or lent to me, and one of the, this is a guy who uses energy for healing and that kind of thing, of which quite a lot is done. But one of the stories he tells is how he can, and it's not magic, he claims that anybody can do it, how he can improve the taste and the properties of an object, what he can do with a glass of wine, how he can take an ordinary glass of wine and turn it into a superior glass of wine. And what is it all about? It's all about the things we've been talking about the last week, the last few weeks, particularly if you tie in what we've been learning in the Mishlis Yishorim, what Kedusha is, and in terms of the people who are involved in this field, in energy, in quantum physics and so on, and they talk about vibrations. So if you say that Ruchnius is energy, if you say Ruchnius is energy, and you say that Ribono Shel Olam is the source of spiritual energy, then energy is vibration, that we know already. Energy is oscillation and vibration. So then you've got to say that Ribono Shel Olam is vibrating kibiyochel on just frequencies that just we can't even conceive of as being that super force of spirituality. And then what is Kedusha? Kedusha is the ability to raise your own level of vibration. And he talks about how you do that, how you raise your own level of vibration and instill that into the object, whether it be the glass of wine, until it starts vibrating at a higher level. So its quality, its actual physical properties start changing. And you know that guy who did the photographic work with crystals that had brachas said on them and all sorts of other religion spiritual kind of things, that the actual crystalline structure of the object changes, so that to be able to bring Kedusha into the world, and how do Jewish people bring Kedusha into the world? The first thing is you've got to bring Kedusha into ourselves, and we bring Kedusha into ourselves by attaching to Hashem and opening ourselves up. If you attach to Hashem and you're blocked, no Kedusha comes. Not because the Kedusha isn't there, it just isn't flowing through. So it requires attaching to Hashem. How do we attach to Hashem? Through tefillah, through our thoughts, through brachas, and through limud HaTorah. That's how we attach. How do we open ourselves? That's through Musa. So the clarifying of ourselves, that's through Musa. In the first shiur that I gave on the Birkas HaShachar, which is how we came to the name I Awaken for the website, because we created the website just after I gave a series of shiurim called Awakening. And Awakening was the Birkas HaShachar, how to wake up. And the idea was not just how to wake up in the morning, it's how to wake up with your life, how to wake up and stay awake. And we used the Birkas HaShachar as the methodology. Unfortunately, not all of them got recorded. The last few, the recording didn't work. But I think 7 or 8 of them are on the website in the Awakening series. And in the very first shiur there, I talked about Kabbalah. And those of you who've heard it will remember. And what's the important thing? What does Kabbalah mean? It means to receive. What do you need to receive? You need a kli. That's the piece that the kind of New Age Kabbalists skip out. For Kabbalah, you need a kli. Who's the kli? You're the kli. Now, what are the conditions of a kli that you need to be mekabel? What must the kli be to be mekabel? Sorry? Must be empty, number one. Number two? Must be complete. Mustn't be cracked and broken. What else? It must be not just empty, but it must be pure and clean. Otherwise, you'll get contamination. So those are the things you need. And it must be big. If you want to say, what do you need for a kli? It needs to be big, pure, complete, and cleansed and empty. And how many people can say that about themselves? If in Kabbalah you are the kli, that's what Kabbalah means. Kabbalah means I receive. But to receive, who do you need to be? So you need to be empty. That means no ego. Ego fills the kli, and there's no place for Kabbalah. How can you be Mekabel if you've got Kabbalah isn't stuff that's in a book somewhere that you can read. That's not Kabbalah. That's not what the word means. Just look at the word. The word means taking in, receiving. And the condition for the learning of Kabbalah, that's what Chazal said, to learn Kabbalah you need to be 40 years old, because before 40 there's no way you're rid of ego. After 40 you kind of start slowly getting rid of ego. But before then it's almost impossible. And you've got to be molech kreisa b'shasa. The person has really filled himself with learning, so that there's a completion. And learning doesn't just mean learning of halacha; it means learning of musa. So that the person is an odom sholem, a complete kli, a kli that is perfect, a kli that isn't cracked, a kli that is empty, a kli that is uncontaminated. Then you can be mekabel. And where are you mekabel from? From everywhere. Then you just have to attach to Hashem, and it comes. The big condition for Kabbalah is the kli. And that's what we talk. When we talk about attaching to Hashem, it's all very well to attach to Hashem, but there's got to be the utensil through which the energy can flow. And that's us. We're the instruments. So we've got to work. That's why so much of Torah is on self-development. And that's the piece we've been talking about in these last few weeks of this series, of the last few weeks, and all the different shiurim in the series, has been how, what an avodah it is, And avodah, by that I mean that we talked about it last week, that avodah in the sense of work, of labor, of an avodah hakodesh, a spiritual practice, that developing ourselves, working on ourselves, making ourselves instruments capable of receiving spiritual energy, that's an avodah. And we need to be doing that avodah every single day. And it doesn't just happen automatically by keeping the mitzvahs. By keeping the mitzvahs, we've got the ma'asim, we're doing deeds, and that's fine. But it's much more than that. It's doing the mitzvahs with the right kind of intentions. We're talking about these vibrations. We're talking about being able to align ourselves with Hashem's kedusha, to cleanse ourselves so that the energy can flow through us, and then to be able to direct that energy into the things around and about us, and the power of doing that, and how to do that. And what we have been saying in the last few weeks is, it's not as if you have to be 100% tzaddik before you can start step one in the process. You do it by bit, and that's why we can experience some of these things when we try them in our own lives. We can experience them to some degree, and that when we are more aligned, we will find things working better. When we are less aligned, things will work less better. And we learned last week that imbechukosai telechu, the idea being the two sides of the formula. It's true that if you go by the chukos, then things will go well. But the opposite is right as well. If things aren't going well, it's probably because we're not going b'chukosai. That what we're doing, and that, as we said last week, doesn't mean just a little detail of check and mezuzah or the women aren't sneers enough. That's not what it means. It means check how aligned you are with the essence of what the Torah wants from a human being. How aligned are we with Hashem's will? As the Mesillas Yesharim said at the end of the Sefer yesterday, all being a chosid is, and what we're talking about is being a chosid, being somebody who's aligned with the Ribbono Shel Olam. All it means is doing what Hashem wants. It just means aligning with Hashem's Ratzon. That's why it's not more complicated than that. Aligning ourselves with Hashem's Ratzon is not just by doing deeds, it's the way we look at the world, it's the way we think about the world. It's the way we think about other human beings, it's the way we feel about other human beings. Those are the things to keep on checking. Not the mezuzahs. Of course the mezuzahs are important, all the ma'aseh ha-mitzvahs are important. But that's not when things aren't going well. Yeah, sometimes through a mezuzah you can get an indication of what's wrong, but you don't need to look at the mezuzah, look at yourself. That's the message. Treat the world as a feedback mechanism and look inward. And if things aren't going well, and I'm not talking about calamities, I'm talking about becoming used to noticing little things that aren't going well. Just little tiny things that aren't going well. And get used to being able to look inside and saying, how aligned am I? And to measure alignment not by activity, but to measure alignment by state of being. Who am I? What is my value system? What am I feeling right now? Check that in a few times a day. Just stop. Say to yourself, what am I feeling? Have you ever tried that? Right now, this minute, what am I feeling? Do you know how to do that? It's not so easy to do when you're in the middle of the day. Not what are you thinking, what are you feeling? Most of us are feeling nothing most of the day. And that's the problem. Because we're operating in our heads. You can't. Kedusha doesn't work through the head. All we learned was in the... I don't remember which of the shiurim. We've had so many such interesting shiurim, but we talked about the capability of the head. I think it was last Sunday night. The capability of the head to affect the emotions, to affect the feelings. You can direct feelings with your head. And we talked about the fact that you can't be thinking good thoughts and having bad feelings. Doesn't work like that. If you're thinking happy thoughts, you've got happy feelings. You can't really separate them. So the head enables you. It's difficult to control feelings. If I were to say to you, feel good, feel happy, and you've got tzoras at the moment, you can't just suddenly feel happy. But if I were to say to you, close your eyes, just relax, think of something beautiful, think of something joyous, that you can do. And all of a sudden I say, now check your feeling. You're feeling better already. So the mind is just the most amazing driver, it's the steering wheel of the emotions, of the feelings. But what really creates spiritual energy is the feelings, not the mind. So if we get stuck in the mind, there's no spiritual energy. Nothing. We have to be able to take the mind and move it into the heart and into feelings so that we can generate and radiate energy outwards. And then if the energy that comes into our mind, and that's why Limud HaTorah is so amazing, because through Limud HaTorah you affect the mind. So if a person's learning Torah and his thoughts are on a sugya of Gemara, or on a beautiful medrash that he learned, or on a piece of Rashi on the Sedra, and that's where his head is, then that directs his feelings as well, or her feelings as well. And through that they can be spiritual energy. So we have the tools. The instrument to use to direct the emotion is the mind, but you can't stop there. You can't stop with the mind. You've got to be able to translate that into the emotion, which you can then radiate outwards, and utilize that to create a flow of energy. And when that flow of energy or spirituality, ruchnius, whatever you want to call it, kedusha, ultimately, when that's working, and that's what a bracha is. What do we do when we say a bracha? If we just go through the meaning of a bracha, so you're about to do something, you're about to eat a piece of fruit or whatever it is, so you start with Baruch Ato Hashem. Just stop there for a moment. What does that mean? Baruch. We learn to Nefesh HaChaim what Baruch means. The source of a brecha, an unlimited reservoir of energy. A brecha. That's what Baruch means. Baruch means you, the Ribbono Shel Olam, are a source, are an unlimited reservoir of energy. Baruch, from brecha. Ato, We're addressing Hashem directly. So what are we doing at that time? We're aligning ourselves. We're now in relationship with Hashem. Baruch Ato and Hashem. Yud Kei Vov Kei. What does that mean? What does Yud Kei Vov Kei mean? Where does that name come from? From Havaya. What does Havaya mean? Being. So now, just work out what you've just done. Baruch Ato Hashem. You have aligned your being with the Ribbono Shel Olam, who is the source of, who is an unlimited reservoir of energy. Let's pause there a moment. Elokeinu. What does Elokeinu mean? Says the Nefesh HaChaim. Elokim means the soul, means energy, the source of energy. So of all Elokeinu, you are our source of energy. This Berecho, this unlimited reservoir, that is you, Hashem, aligned to my being. Yud Kei Vov Kei. I feel you. I experience you. In myself. Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh, says the Ribbono Shel Olam to Moshe. You will experience me through being, not through definition. What is that whole discussion with Moshe Rabbeinu? Says, Moshe, tell me who you are. Define. I want a definition. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's not in your heads. You'll never get me if you're in your head. Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh, it is through life that you'll experience me. Through living. That's what Yud Kei Vov Kei means. So now, Baruch Atah Hashem, I've aligned. Elokeinu, this alignment is my source of energy. Melech Ha'olam, that governs the universe. And there's the whole of all quantum physics in the beginning of every bracha. Everything. All of Kabbalah is in that. Everything's there. Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu, Melech Ha'olam, is the magic formula of all energy, of all forces, of all powers, of everything there is in the world. There is nothing but that. And then you say, Bore Peri Ha'etz, that energy created the fruit of a tree. So what happens when I now consume that fruit? What am I consuming? The Ribbono Shel Olam's energy. Now what can I do with that when I take that into my body? Now I have nourishment. But what am I nourishing? Yeah, you're nourishing the vitamins in the, you know, nourishing your body. That's a small part of what the apple's doing, or the grape, or the, or not banana, because that's a Bore Pri Adama. But the whatever it is you're eating, the peach or the nectarine, that's a small part of it. It's the energy that you're taking in from that. This is divine energy that you're taking right into your body. What does that make you? What is that aligning you with? What power and energy does that give you? So all of a sudden, the eating of an apple becomes an avodah. It becomes a spiritual practice of enormous power. But we don't have the time. We just mumble a broth and take a bite and get running, because we're not prepared to allow ourselves this kind of a life. And so we deprive ourselves of this kind of a life. And that's why I say to you, the goyim are catching on quicker and quicker every day, realizing what we have access to and becoming more and more astonished at how we're not using it, how we're just not relating to it. We're kind of in a dwell. We're just going along our lives, doing our things.
And that energy, is that only available if the individual is aligned and conscious of?
Yes. You don't get it automatically. Absolutely. And is a kli. And you're a kli. And no, it's available. It's all there. It's just like...
But it's not going to be...
It's not going to be. If you plug a broken appliance into the electricity and it's not working, you don't say another power failure. Eskom's not supplying power. There's power in the plug. It's just the appliance is broken, so there's nothing flowing through the appliance. So we've got the power is always there. There's no load shedding from the Ribbono Shel Olam. The power is always there. You can connect in any time of the day or night, any day of the year you want to. You can connect in. The power is there. Just check that your appliance isn't broken. That's your business. To see that your appliance is working efficiently, that you've got to take care of it. If your appliance is working efficiently and you plug in, you've got it all. There's no limit to what you can achieve with that. Absolutely no limit. But we only get this at moments because we're so preoccupied with all the other things we think are really important, and it's not so. It's not so at all. But the only hard part is the taking the time and focusing. That's the only part that's hard. Just doing it. The only hard part is just doing it. Once you're doing it, you get it and you start feeling it. And then it makes a huge difference. Where's Jackie? Jackie, when was it we talked about the apple? It was over Shabbos. We didn't do it in this year. But Jackie tried it with eating an apple. And just briefly, Jackie?
I made And that's in everything, I think.
Did it give you energy?
Huge. Yeah.
There's your answer.
I think it says, not like, well, the energy, but a huge effect, like a sense of appreciation. Through that, I think it's energy then connecting to Hashem when I don't.
Well, appreciation is one of the ways of opening the kli. A kli that is closed, this is not appreciation, is one of the ways that you actually open the utensil and say, I'm open. Because to be open, you have to be appreciative. You can't, beings that are not appreciative cannot receive. You do not receive. Do you like giving to people who are not appreciative? You don't. You stop giving. So the Baruch Hashem is the same. That's the way the world is designed. The world doesn't fill kelim that are not appreciative. So if it brings you to appreciation, you're opening yourself to more of that energy flow, and with opening that to yourself to more of that energy flow, you become more aware, and you become more conscious, and you become more energetic, and so everything else, everything follows from that. The purpose of these short shiurim, we've only got a few of them, is not so much to say, you know, you must start doing this immediately and change your lives. It's just to open our eyes to what we've got. If that's all it does, That you begin to realize what we have in Torah, and what we're capable of, how we're capable of utilizing it if we apply our mind to it, then we've been very successful. We'll touch on that in the discussion tomorrow night about education, how important it is to revolutionize the way Torah is being taught. And we'll discuss that tomorrow. The way Torah is being taught is insufficient for this generation. It's too good, or too, it's insufficient. This generation has needs that go beyond the way Torah is being generally. Obviously, there are lots and lots of exceptions of wonderful people who are teaching Torah in the most amazing ways. But it's just as a general thing, particularly at a school level, at an elementary and a high school level, the way Torah is being taught has to be radically reinvented, because its power is not being... The power it is able to give our young people, they're not getting. They're getting knowledge, they're getting facts, but they're not getting power. And what they're going to need is power. In the positive sense of the word, power, energy, the ability to impact, to make a difference, to achieve, to build themselves, to grow themselves. They're going to need stuff that the Torah has. It's all here. All we need is for teachers to learn how to access it themselves and how to teach it to children and to adults, and we can start educating a generation of kids and adults for what's ahead, not for what used to be. And we'll talk about that in more detail tomorrow night in that session. Any other comments or questions? What I want to then touch on tonight is another side of the story. The obvious side of the coin. There's a disturbing Orach Chaim. Orach Chaim is not in this week's parasha. The Orach Chaim is actually in Shlach Lecha, where the Torah says, "Vayomusu ha'anoshi mitziye dibas oretz ro'o, b'magefo lifnei Hashem." And the people who spoke badly of Eretz Yisrael died, the Meraglim, in a magefo, in a plague before Hashem. V'Yoshua bin Nun v'Chalev ben Yufune hoyu min ha'anoshim ahem, ha'olchim latur et ha'aretz. And Yoshua bin Nun and Chalev ben Yufune were one of those people, were among those people who went to spy out the land. So the Orach Chaim says, it's Perek Yudalad Posuk Lamed Ches. Yeshua bin Nun v'Chalev bin Yifune choyu min anoshem, not choyu, choyu min anoshem ahem. They lived, they remained alive. Asks the Orach Chaim, lo hoyo tzorich loyma. This, we don't need to be told this, that Yeshua bin Nun and Chalev bin Yifune survived. Acha shepires hakosu v'omar, the Torah has already told us who died. Ha'anoshim motziei dibas ha'oretz ro. The people who died were the ones who spoke badly of Eretz Yisrael. We know that Yeshua and Kalev did not do that. They spoke well, so we know they didn't die. It's already been we've been told that in the previous pasuk in Lamed Zayin. Holamadetu, you learn from that Shalom Esu Elo Oisom Shehutziu Diboro, that the only people who died were the ones who talked badly of Eretz Yisrael. Oid Lama Hutzrach Loyim Amina Anoshim, and why does it have to say of the men Veit Ba'ir Api Ma Sheomru B'Maseches Bova Basra? We can understand this by Gemara in Bova Basra. Tanya Ya'ir Ben Menashe Noilad Bimei Yaakov. Ya'ir Ben Menashe was born in the days of Yaakov. He was Yaakov's grandson. V'hikshu mimashi matzinu shenichlas loretz tichtiv v'yaku mehem anshe ho'ay kishloshit b'shisho ish ze yo ben menashe sheshokel kerubo shel Sanhedrin. It says in Yoshua that they killed of the people of Ai some 36 people, and it says it was that this was Menashe ben Yair who was counted as the entire Sanhedrin. So he was there. He came into Eretz Yisrael. How could he have come into Eretz Yisrael? He wasn't Yeshua, he wasn't Kalev, and he was born at the time, at the time of the Meraglim. The Tirutz Rav Acha, Shilu Nigzor Gezerah, Lo Al Pochus Mi Ben Esrim, Velo Al Yosem Mi Ben Shishim, Adkan. The Gezerah was only applied to people under 20 and over 20 and under 60. So Yair Ben Menashe was not of that age. Vihinei, says the Orachayim, that's the Gemara. Why doesn't the Gemara just answer, Yair was a tzaddik? Why would Yair have been wiped out? He was a tzaddik. Horeisa ladas, you learn from that. Kitzitkas hatzaddik loy hitzilosoy mehagzeiro hahi. That being a tzaddik can't save a person, necessarily, from a gzeiro like that. V'hu ma'amar akosu v'yoshua chayu, Yeshua ben Nun and Kalev ben Yefune survived, Perush, Tam Shechoyu, the reason they survived, Hu Lihiyosi Minoshim Ahochim Lotu Hisha Omdolahim, Avalim Loayu Mehatzorim Vahayu Nishorim Bichlal Yisrael. They weren't part of Yisrael at that time. They had gone, they were out of the group. Hoiso Boa Gzera Gamalei Magam Shem Tzadikim Gemurim. They could have been taken with a Gzera as well, even though they were Tzadikim. Letzad Shayu Lamalem Esrim Kshiotzim Mimsayim Lamatim Ishishim. What happened? The Gzera was decreed. Yes, on the 10 spies who spoke badly, and on a whole lot of other people who were between 20 and 60. They were between 20 and 60. What saved them? Not the fact that they were tzaddikim, but the fact they weren't there. They were in Israel at the time. They were busy spying. They weren't part of the group. So Chaim Shmulevitz used to learn from this that there's a power, the group is a different identity. If we understand that a little bit more deeply, we've mentioned that the species of the earth, animals are not, they're not treated as individuals. Animals are, an entire species is like one being. And that's why you've got laws such as you can't wipe out a species, because that's a kind of ritzicho, that's a kind of murder. But to kill an animal is just like severing a finger. It's not that anyway. One animal is a limb of a total being, that being the species. So you can't cause tzar, because that's tzar balechayim. Even if you cause tzar to one animal, that's tzar balechayim. But you can kill an animal. It's interesting. You can't cause pain, but you're allowed to kill. Because there's no such thing as killing one animal. That's not called killing. Killing is when you wipe out a species. If you kill a human being, that's called killing, because every human being is a species. However, the nations of the world are treated more by species than by individual. And that's how they function, by groups. Klal Yisrael is treated as individuals. Every individual is a world, and that's by Kol HaMatzil Nefesh Echad B'Yisrael, Kilu Hitzil Kol HaOlam Kula, I think is the Loshon. A Jewish neshama, the complexity of a Jewish being is such that he's a little universe. And he functions, the spiritual complexity of a Jew is not like one of the species. He's unique and individual, and a little universe on his own. And that we get at the way they're told to count, right at the beginning of this week's parasha. Su'u es rosh kol adas b'nei Yisrael l'mishpechosom l'veis ha'veison. Count them, but the word for counting is raise up their heads. And what we learn from there, the Beis HaVosom, is really around the yichus issues. Every Jew has yichus. His parents, grandparents, great grandparents. He comes from a family. There's enormous importance in every person. Like the Orach Chaim over there brings the Medrash that says that the nations of the world were jealous when they saw how the Jews were counted, and Hashem said, "Well, I'll count you too. Bring your Sefer Yuchsin. Tell me your family tree, where you come from." And they couldn't. They're from all over the place. And every Jew has a family tree. And even today, many of us know our family's quite a long way back. Because it's something that we're very particular about. So the Jew, every individual Jew, has a complex neshama that is infinitely valuable on its own. However, there is another element too. We are also part of a whole. So we have a dual identity. We have an identity as an individual, and we have an identity as part of a whole. The whole groups can be treated with their own kind of nature. When a group gets defined, that group gets handled as an element, as an identity all on its own. So where do we see that, for example? We see that with the Bechoros. We see in this week's Parsha, the Bechoros had Kedusha. And that Kedusha was later transferred to the Levim in this week's Parsha. But why did the Bechoros have Kedusha? Because they were saved in Mitzrayim. Why were they saved? Why would they have been killed? What did they do wrong? The plagues were against the Mitzrim. The plagues weren't against the Jews. What did the Jewish Bechoros do wrong to deserve to be killed, that the fact that they weren't killed gave them some special status? That they were kapora, no. The Chazal say very simply that it's a kivan shenitna reshus lemazik. Once a mazik or mashchis, once a mashchis has been given a job to do. Once a negative force attaches, to use modern terminology, once a negative force attaches to a defined body of people, that negative force attaches to every person in that body. So we don't always have full control over everything that happens to us as individuals. On one level we do, but there's superimposed on that, there's another dynamic going on. We're also part of a group. And that group could be Klal Yisrael. That group could be a particular community. It could be a particular family. We're also part of a defined group of people that has its own soul. That's what's important. It's not only individuals who have souls. Groups have a soul too. There's a soul to a group. Just as we talk about the Sarei Amedida, every nation has a Sar. Every nation has a soul. When we talk about the culture of certain nations, it's not just something that's developed over time and so on. We believe that every nature has a personality, every culture, every nationality, every ethnic group has a personality, has a soul, and everybody's affected. So individuals can separate themselves from that, and they can grow out of that, and they can do all sorts of things. But barring that happening, they're part of that tsar. That's how so many stories are told about the Vilna Gaon, for example, when he was traveling to Eretz Yisrael, and he told the Balagola, the wagon driver, not to go through Germany, and he would pay whatever the extra cost to go around, but not to go through Germany. And the Vilna Gaon was asleep. The Balagola noticed he was asleep, and there was a little shortcut just through a strip of Germany that he could take, so he took it. And as he crossed the border, the Vilna Gaon woke up and said, "I told you not to go here. What are you doing?" And he couldn't understand. He said, "How could you possibly know? It's dark, when there's no border post. How could you possibly know that I'm in Germany?" And then the Gaon said, "Those are things you can feel. There is a group energy as well. And that group energy attaches to a land, attaches to the people of the land, it attaches to groups. So we've got to be conscious of that dynamic as well. The fact that Kolev and Yoshua were tzaddikim, that wouldn't have removed them from the group that got affected by the Gezerah. So the Gezerah is a force that comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam that results in the destruction of that group. They would have been part of that group. They were just physically not there at the time. That's what saved them. They were physically not part of that group. We see the same thing in the parasha. Yeah, but it wasn't the whole of Klali, it wasn't the whole of Klali Israel. That particular gezeira affected a certain group of people that were in a certain place at a certain time. So it wasn't just the whole of Klal Yisrael. It was a defined group within Klal Yisrael, defined by space and age. Where they were, location and age, is what defined that group at that time. And that's what saved them. That they just weren't there. The same as the Bechoris. They were indoors. And there was the thing of blood on there, and they were told, don't go outdoors. So what would happen if a Jewish Bechor would have gone outside? He would have been in the place that was demarcated with that, with the Gezeira, with the Mashkis, with the negative energy, whatever force you want to use it, that applies to a certain place. The fact is, if you go and, you know, stick your finger into a plug, the energy is so great, you're going to get a shock. And even if you're a tzaddik, you're going to get a shock. It's not going to make a difference. Because that's just, when we're working with energies, there are some energies we can control and do, but there's sometimes by attaching yourself, just as you can attach yourself to Hashem and to all the positive energy, so you can attach yourself to a source of negative energy at a given time. So when the Briskarov was fleeing from Europe and going through some dangerous areas with his children, he just said to them, keep your mind completely focused on the Ribbono Shel Olam. Don't take your mind off for a second. Say Shema Yisrael, whatever you need to do. Don't take your mind. Connect to Hashem. Because we're in a place of great danger. He didn't say we're tzaddikim and we'll be alright. Just stay, hold on tight so that the energy you're receiving, the spirituality, the ruchnis, the kedush is coming from Hashem. And if we're attached to Hashem, nothing will happen to us. And they tell about the amazing nisim that happened to them as they went on that journey and they did remain attached. So here we've got also in the parasha, the Halevim lematei avosom loy hospokdu besoichom. The Levim, according to the tribes of their fathers, were not counted with the rest of the Jewish people. And then Hashem says, in fact, in 2 Pesukim later in Memtes, achet matei Levi loysifkod, don't count the Levim, vesreishom loysiso, and don't raise their heads besoich bnei Yisrael, among bnei Yisrael, count them separately. Ask Rashi, why count them separately? Why? What's so important about counting them separately? In any case, we knew the subtotals. So what would be the difference if they had their own subtotal, but they were part of the total as well? Says Rashi, Tzofa HaKadosh Baruch Hu She'asidu Lamed Gezeiro Al Kol HaNimni Miben Eslim Shona V'mayla. Hashem foresaw that there was going to be a decree against all those who were 20 and 60, between 20 and 60. She'a Musa B'midba, they're going to die in the desert. Omar, al yu elu bichlal lefihem shehem shili, shiloitzo ba'egel. The Levim didn't make a mistake with the eagle, so they're part of my people. I don't want them included. What, the Ribbono Shel Olam can't sort things out? The Ribbono Shel Olam needs it. That's how the world is designed. That if there's a group has its own identity, and if the identity of the group is targeted by the negative force called the gezeira, then that whole group, the neshama of that group is affected, and consequently, every part of that group is affected, just as the human body. If your head is thinking bad thoughts, or negative thoughts, or destructive thoughts, or egoistic thoughts, and therefore you've lost alignment with Hashem, your finger can't say, you know, it's not me. I'm not thinking bad things. I'm just a finger. It's the whole body is affected. So Klal Yisrael also operates as a body with its own identity, and even groups within Klal Yisrael operate as their own bodies with their own identities, including the Levim, and Hashem has to say it almost like, is that limiting Hashem's power? In a kind of way, he's saying, yes, because that's how I've designed the world. I could have designed it differently, but I didn't. I've designed the world that when a group of people is formed, that group has an identity, and if that group does something negative, the result affects that entire group. If they do it as a group, if you do something as an individual, then you're affecting the feedback to yourself as an individual. If you do something as a group, you're affected as a group. And we have to be very concerned, like in Eretz Yisrael today, let's say. We're looking at a situation where things are happening at government levels. We can't just sit back and say, yeah, kind of not our business. It's very much our business, because we're acting as a group there. When a prime minister of Israel misbehaves himself, that's not a prime minister misbehaving himself. That's a nation. When the nation is making national decisions that aren't aligned with the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's all of us. Is it just Eretz Yisrael? Is it just the people who live in Eretz Yisrael? Or is it us as the Jewish nation? Who knows how the grouping works? But certainly when a nation is out of line, that nation attracts the negative force, just as we've been discussing before. And then the individuals in that nation are impacted, even though they're tzaddikim. So you've got to just see these two dynamics taking place simultaneously. So I can govern the feedback from my actions and thoughts when I act as an individual. But when I act as part of a nation, or when the nation of which I'm part, or the group of which I'm part, acts as a group, I'm part of that. And I get all the negative energy that comes to that group because of, even though I didn't actually make decisions, or I wasn't personally active in that, I'm part of that group, and the group acted, that attracts negative forces. And of course, the opposite applies as well, and that's why we dive in a minion. Because the power of a minion can do something that that individuals sometimes can't do. Because the minion itself has a power to it. It has a certain neshama to it. It has a soul, it has a personality, it has a power. And the minion can develop its own energy, and it can develop its own connection to Hashem. But then one has to be careful with what minyanim one chooses. And you've got to try and choose not just a minion. Then you've got to choose a minion, that kind of where you feel that there is that alignment, and you feel aligned, and that that's not just by the energy of a minion is not a function of the volume of the davening, nor of the vibrations of the shokling. It's not that. That's not. You've got to start getting sensitive to a minion. That you can walk into a minion and feel very quickly, this is kind of good. There's a good energy here, or there's a negative energy here. And certainly in Los Angeles, where there's a wide choice of minyanim, and here I've gotten into that habit quite. Sometimes even there's a good minyan which is normally good, and sometimes I walk in on a Shabbos and it's not good. I can feel, I don't know why or what. I leave it and go and daven somewhere else. If you're connecting to a minyan, that's what a minyan is. It's a vibration, but you've got to link into the real vibration, not into the ego stuff. And you've got to be able to separate the two. You've got to be able to feel the deep spiritual vibration, the deep ruchnis that there is there, the extent of alignment with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and your ability to become part of that grouping, so that you can daven there not only as an individual on a one-on-one, but you can also daven as part of that group and be impacted, and be impacted by that group. That becomes very important.
Would a woman therefore not need be more as a group herself, that she doesn't need the koach of a minion?
For tefillah, yeah, she needs association and community for other areas, but when it comes to tefillah, her power of tefillah is more direct than a man's.
Would you say it's as great as therefore as a minion?
Yes, absolutely. Look at some of the tefillahs of the imohes and what they were able to achieve through their tefillahs. Hannah with her tefillah, Sora, Rivka, Rochel with their tefillahs. That's the whole thing there. They didn't go to minyanim. They were able to do that with their heart, because women daven from heart, men daven from head. And they struggle to get from their head to their hearts, and that's part of what we do. And a minion can help that process. In a minion, you can get down there. You can get out of ego. You can get down there. It's difficult enough in a minion, but without a minion, it's very, very hard. So when we say that I'm going to minion, we've got to also not start treating that just as another routine. Going to minion. So what does that mean? Going to minion. What are you doing at minion? Davening. It's just we've actually got to tune in, like eating the apple, the way we make a brocha. And understand. So what is the difference between davening alone? You should land up going to a minyan because it's just so amazing. It's just so incredible. Not because that's one of the things that we do. It should be going to a minyan because, wow, just everything changes. Your alignment, you feel it. You feel the rest of the day as a result of that. You should test. If going to a minyan has no impact on your day, don't waste your time. You go to find another minyan. Or there's something wrong with your davening. Check your davening. Your day should be different when you've davened properly. It should be completely different. Nothing?
And really, just getting back to what you did earlier with the Levim on the Parsha, what is the significance that when you separated the counting, or when you counted the whole nation, just from 20 to 60, that when you count the Levim, it was just from a month, any child from a month and older, those are a much wider net.
Yeah, partially, I know there are a number of reasons given, but partially since the Levim were going to stand in the place of the Bechorim, being a Bechor is just a physiological fact, so you start counting a Bechor from 30 days from when it's no longer a Nephil. So it's the same way as you would count a Bechor. When would you count a Bechor? If I want to know how many Bechorim there are, it's got nothing to do with Yotzei Tzava, it's got to do with being a viable child. So since the Levim were taking the place of the Bechorim, they counted the same way as a Bechor was counted.
And then also
also just in terms of going to Minyan, you said like you feel the energy over there. But if the energy isn't good, instead of maybe going and looking for another Minyan, maybe there's an achas on us to convert, to inject.
If you can. If you can, yes. If you can. That and that's with any group of people. Whenever you walk into a situation, you have an option of being swallowed into the energy of the situation, or of impacting the energy of the situation. And you've got to take quite a quick reading, and you get quite used to it when you get into this kind of thing. You've got an energy dial that works very quickly, and it tells you on one-on-ones. You get on a one-on-one. You have the high energy individual, and the low energy individual. A high energy group, low energy, and then you make a decision whether you want to energize the other individual or the group, or you want to go somewhere where you are energized. And it will vary. There are times when you need the energy from the people around you, and there are times when you feel that you're able to give. When you do give energy, what happens to you? You become energized, yeah, because energy is flowing through you. If you're giving energy properly, if you're giving energy through kind of volume and shaking around and saying, then you get very exhausted. But if you're just connecting, if you're properly connected and the energy is flowing through you and to the people around you, that's with love and with empathy and understanding and feeling, then you're able to energize and be energized in the process. If you're becoming drained through the energizing process, then something's going wrong. There's a leakage, there's a short, and you've got to try and find out what it is. I said, don't worry about them. All you've got to worry about is you.
I know, but I can't keep up with them.
You don't have to keep up with them. You don't have to keep up with them. You're diving at your pace. You're in a minion. You're with people. There's an energy. If there's an energy that is positive for you, you do your thing. And at certain points, you join them. They're saying Kedusha. You say Kedusha with them. There's certain points during the davening where you really are doing it together as one. If possible, when they start the Shmona Esrei, you start the Shmona Esrei with them. But even to say Shmona Esrei, it's not possible in the time we have available to say an entire Shmona Esrei properly. So I've often said to people, davening, even the Shmona Esrei, you should treat as a menu in the restaurant. You know, you have to read through the whole menu, but you don't have to eat everything on the menu in one sitting. So when you're going through the Shmona Esrei, it's a menu of 19 brochas. You spend your time on the brochas that you need to spend your time on in that particular davening, and the rest you read through. As best you can, and you get better and better at being able to get something out of them, even when you're going fairly fast. You know, you practice that, but you can't get, like we just talked about, making a brocha. You know, you can't make a brocha, like can't make 19 brochas like that, with all the words in between, and still get to work after Shacharis. That's not going to happen. So you've got
in the previous shiur when you said how great it'd be to with the chazonos. Having chazonos, proper chazonos.
Yeah, that's what chazonos used to do for people. People is, you know, that used to energize.
Yes.
That used to establish a vibration. All of a sudden, through the music, you could relate to the words, even if you didn't have a clue what was being said. And you could be brought to tears.
Yeah.
You're right, and I think I told the story of in one of Rebellious Droshes, where he talks about that. He says, I just wanted to, you know, we've got the Rebellious Lopin's Droshes on the Shmuz and now on the website. And I've recommended people to listen to them even if you don't understand Yiddish. Because the energy of a... Just as it would be good to go and hear him, if he were in town, you would go and hear him even if you can't understand. But even to hear the voice and to hear the things, it's quite amazing. And I just picked on one just to hear the quality of the sound, and I couldn't stop listening. And one of the things he talks about is that he was at a wedding, and there was a chazan at the wedding, Davin Dayos, the chazan to Davin Mayriv. So... The chazan davened, and he came to Valser Soton Milafonenu Milach Be'acharenu in Hashkivenu, and everybody was in tears. And he says, I was in tears. He says, why was everybody in tears? Was it the first time they heard about a Soton? They never heard it before? Was it the first time they saw those words? They said it last night and the night before. Were they crying? No, they weren't. It was just the chazan's ability to translate an idea into an emotion. And he says, that's what Musar is. Musar is a practice, it's an avoda. It's a translation of ideas into emotions. Musar is not the study of ideas, it's a translation of ideas into emotions, because the transformative energy is in the emotion, it's not in the idea. And that's what the chazonim used to do. And in many ways, it's a pity that there's no chazonis. Mm-hmm. Now you go to a concert for chazonis. Well, it's not the same. The chazonim used to be able to do that. They could transform the words of the davening into emotions that used to bring people to tears. That was very powerful and amazing.
Sorry, one last question next. How is it possible that a minyan of 10 people is as powerful in minyan terms as a minyan of 10,000 people?
It's not. Who says it's as powerful? Well, there's the minyan. No, it's not. Minyan's not a minyan. They're good minyanim and bad minyanim. They're high energy minyanim and low energy minyanim. And they're minyanim of Berovam, that's what Berovam Hadras Melech means. There's more energy and more power in, with more people. It's in last week's parsha. Verodfu michem chamisho mea umea michem revova yudofu, says the Torah. That 5 of you will be able to pursue 100, and 100 of you will be able to pursue 10,000. So what they all ask, what's the formula's wrong? The answer is 100 people is more than 20 times as powerful as 5 people. As you go up, the energy bounces off it; it becomes exponential. And one knows what it's like that to be with a group of people, with a meaningful group of people. And that's Beroyev Am Hadras Melech. When a lot of people are doing something together with one direction, that's the important thing. That there's one direction. If everybody's aligned, doing something. If everybody's in their own head, doing it for different reasons, and their thoughts are on their own head, and their egos are on their own head, then there's negative energy. And you can pick it up. We don't have time to do it here, but maybe next time I'll show you how you can measure the energy in a group. I could measure the energy in this. Not only could I measure the energy and demonstrate it to you, measure the energy in this room, but I could show you how to impact it, that you'll see the reading change. As you impact it with thoughts, aligning thoughts, it gets the energies in one way, and misaligned thoughts. It's unbelievable what a group of people can do with their emotions and with their feelings if they're aligned. And that's what a good minyan is. A good minyan is when everybody's aligned. It's not about ego. It's about connecting to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's fine. It's gentle. There's Kedusha is in silence. Kedusha is not in noise. And davening is meant to be silent, actually. Davening is actually not meant to be noisy. Sometimes the noise helps us, but that's kind of an external thing. The real Kedusha, the kind of energy we're talking about, is called the Mama Dako. It's a very silent, quiet place. You've got to hear it inside you. Can't do it if there's a lot of tumult going on around you. So when I'm talking about energy, don't confuse it with tumult, with noise. Noise is sound energy. It's not koyel, it's not Kedusha. You can have high sound energy. It has nothing to do with the kind of energy I'm talking about. You have lots of movement and lots of shuffling and shaking. That's not the energy we're talking about. It's a different kind of an energy. And that's the energy of Shavuos that we're coming to. You know, the whole thing with Shavuos, you'll remember, is Vayichon Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar Ki'ish Echad B'Lev Echad. What brought about the power that brought the Torah down for us, we would not have been able to be Zoche to the Torah if we weren't even able to be Kelev Echad, to have one communal emotion. That's the energy I'm talking about. It's not a tzibur, is not 100 people standing in a room with 100 different thoughts. It's a communal emotion. And that's why you feel it, I'm sure, when there's been a communal tragedy or we have trouble in Eretz Yisrael, for example, Nebuchadnezzar, and we get together as a community to say Tehillim, let's say. Then do you feel a different energy? Okay, that's Kalei Vechot, because it's their singularity of purpose. It's not about me. It's not about showing off. It's just about the issue at hand. Everybody knows why they're there, and they're there for the same reason, and you feel the energy. That's how a minyan should be every day. Like you feel these people are there, ki'ish echad, b'lev echad, one communal emotion. And you should be able to link into that emotion as you walk into the room. You should feel that emotion and be able to link into that. So that in addition to your own interactions, you're part of a tzibur, you're part of a group classified as a group that can attract negative forces, as we've talked about. But more important for the purposes of our discussion, it can generate positive force in a way that an individual can't. And that it then gets the feedback. Just as an individual who puts out positive energy gets positive energy back, so a tzibur that puts out positive energy gets positive energy back. And how does an individual put out positive energy? What are one of the ways that we put out positive energy? Kol ha'mispalel ba'ad chaveiro. Daven for somebody else. If you daven for yourself, that's my positive energy. Daven for yourself, it's your own selfishness. So that's not how we do it. We daven for others. That's why the Shmoneh Esrei is in the plural. Daven for others. Daven for the whole. So how does a tzibur put out positive energy? How should a community put out positive energy? For other tziburim. Now imagine a minyan davening on Shabbos. I hope the minyan across the road is full and wonderful, and I hope the minyan down the street is full and wonderful, and I hope they get lots of money for their new building, and I hope those guys get lots of money. Not us. Put the energy out. Then the energy will come back. How many tziburim do that? That's not so often. And that's why we put out negative energy. A tzibur has a personality. And just as an individual can be small-minded, a tzibur can be small-minded. An individual can be jealous, a tzibur can be jealous. An individual can be destructive, a tzibur can be destructive. And what is the principle we've been generating? That the force you put out is what reflects back to you. Same applies with the tzibur. The force you put out is what gets brought back to you. And some of you might remember the story that I've told so many times with the when I was talking to Rabbeinu Shvinkel, and we were standing it was the Rosh Hashiva of Mir at the time, and we were standing in Meir Shorim, and we were talking, and I was a young boy in the yeshiva, and all of a sudden he just said, "Excuse me a moment," and he started running down the street, and I saw him running. Interestingly enough, it was my Rosh Hashiva from my previous yeshiva, Rabbeinu Mishkovsky, was standing on the other side, and he ran down to him, and they greeted each other warmly, and he took some money out of his pocket, and he gave it to Rabbeinu Mishkovsky, and then he walked back to me, and I said, I've got to ask what that was all about. He just said, it's a thing in Mir, when we see another Rosh Hashiva, we give them something for their yeshiva. So we should never think that we have a monopoly. And how big is Mir Yeshiva today? Look what's happened. Look what's happened to it. Just defy it all. But that was the principle. We believe in supporting, in driving, in helping other yeshivas. And always, that's how they were trained, always give money to other yeshivas, help other yeshivas, support other yeshivas. That brings brings tremendous bracha. I definitely believe that that's part of the bracha that the United States experiences as a tzibur. Because it's also built, and sometimes they do such stupid things, but ultimately they come right. There's a lot of bracha. It's just a country that has a bracha. It doesn't mean that everybody in it is a tzaddik. Just a country that has had amazing bracha, that has years and years and years and years of growth and prosperity, even through the ups and the downs, but the downs aren't usually as bad as other people's downs, and the ups are usually much better than other people's ups, and major force in the world for that long and outlived all that. It's just been quite an amazing success story. And I'm sure that part of it is because they put out positive energy. They invest in other countries, they help other countries, they take immigrants from other countries, they send aid to other countries in ways that I don't think any other country in the world's history has ever done. The volume of aid and of help, they get a bad rapping when they sometimes do things that are a little bit clumsy. But even in Iraq at the moment, the kind of things they're doing in Iraq and educating people and building schools and dams and restoring power, they've been working like crazy to get that country to an infrastructure level that it never has had in its history. Just because they believe a stronger world is a better world, a more successful world is a better world, a more successful country, a freer country, the country that they like to share their bracha. As when you talk about the personality of a nation, the American personality as a national personality is one of the most generous that has ever existed in the different way we've been talking about Mir Yeshiva. Its personality is one of generosity. That was Mir, just an unbelievable anova, humility and generosity. And so one sees it with tziburim as well, that when a tzibur is generous, when a tzibur has brocha and sends out love, it reverberates back. When a tzibur gets very closed and very controlling and very mean, it stays small and it stays limiting. And one sees it even in Johannesburg, one sees with the places that have had a lot of brocha. It's not so much, if you look around, and it's the same in other parts of the world, it's not so much because of the charisma of the rabbi necessarily, or of his chokhmah, or wisdom. Very often it's just the personality of the place. That is just, the places that have good, warm personalities seem to just do well. It applies with individuals, it applies with families, it applies with groups of individuals. Just as an individual puts out an energy and gets it reflected back, so a tzibur has its own unique personalities. The Orach Chaim says with Yeshua, as we see with the Levim, has its own personality, its own neshama, and can put out its own energy and receive its own energy, both positive and negative. So if we have some kind of an understanding of the dual dynamic, I think we get a better sense of its complexity.